Just literally, I'm sitting outside the workshop where we've been filming today. So I just filmed the last scene of in the workshop of with Car 10. But Tim is still in there. He's got to do a couple of little bits. He's been lazy. He didn't start till late. You know how he is. And so, you know, I've got out on time. So you've just got me, but he may be along any moment now. Brown car
guy. Okay, Fast Series 11.
I know. Who can
How does
it?
That Series feel? 11. Series 11. And it kicks off tomorrow, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, it starts airing on National Geographic Channel at 8 o'clock tomorrow. And, yeah, it is Series 11. Who would have believed it? Certainly, I don't think Tim and I, if you had asked us 10 years ago, whether we thought we'd still be making another series in 10 years' time, I don't think either of us would have thought that would be on the cards. But it's happened, and it's been great that we've been able to do this. Long may it last. But you know, we're grateful for what we've had. So it's been brilliant. And the best part of it is that in all that time, we've been able to take 110 cars and present them back to their owners in better shape than we picked them up. So that's the most important thing that
that's 110 cars. I mean, that's quite staggering when you think about it. I mean, I know that you restore and work on a lot of cars throughout your career and the other stuff that you also do, but as a percentage of the total number of cars that you've worked on in your life, how much of that constitutes what you've done on Car SOS?
Well, you know, I don't know. I suppose probably more on Car SOS than anywhere else, really. But I think
Of the pace of the work? Is that because of the stress of having to do them quickly?
Well, having to do them quickly is it's a process that is not the normal process that goes on in restoration garages. So, taking on 10 full jobs every year is a big thing, because normally workshops will maybe have 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 of those going throughout the course of a year. And then lots of smaller jobs that just, you know, sort of pop in and do that kind of thing. Yeah, Tim's just coming now as well. Yeah. So, you know, normally you get 2 or 3 sort of small little jobs going on, and then the big jobs are spaced throughout the year.
Somebody farted in the workshops. So I've run out. Yeah,
no, we have it's you. You brought it in with you.
No, I'm not.
I'm fine. How are you doing, Tim? You're right.
Yeah, not bad.
It's not bad in the workshop. Is this just don't do it in the car? I guess.
You know? I know.
It's drifted in. It's on your clothes.
No, that's my breath. That's my breath.
Oh right. Okay. That's okay then. That's all right.
No, it's not.
So it's doing. Having done 110 full-on restorations, I'm not so sure that there are many businesses out there that over that period of time would have done 110 full-on restos.
I don't think there'd be any.
No,
it's staggering. This is what I was just saying, Tim, that as you just come in, I was saying that this is Series 11, and it's incredible. And there's a number of cars that you've rescued in that time period. I mean, it's absolutely staggering. And as Faz was saying, it's like not even many businesses would have even in their most wildest ambitions, have hoped to have done 110 cars in that period of time.
It's so true. But we have the added advantage of being Car SOS. And with that brings a certain sense of drive and ambition and wanting to be a part of the team. So we're lucky to be able to cherry pick some of the best people in and around the country. And I think that's been a big part of it.
Well, I think that is it, because most businesses don't get to really prevail upon other businesses, other specialists, and say, look, can you help us out? And can you put us at the head of the queue, and can we have it tomorrow, please? You know, so we don't, you know, not many other businesses can work like that.
Do you think that the sense of urgency comes simply from the real life stories of the people that own these cars? And in some cases, like, you know, I was reading the press release, and in some cases, the clock is literally ticking.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, yeah, that is the case. You know, sometimes we take on a car and we are fully aware of the nominee's situation, and
it has an impact on the speed and the decisions of the jobs we do, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, because we can't go, we can't delay. We have to try and make sure that everything happens. If somebody says, "Well, look, yeah, I can, I can get that back to you, you know, in a couple of weeks' time. You know, we have to say, honestly, we have to say you've got to be able to sort of like pull it out of the bag more quickly than that, because time is of the essence. You know,
with many of them, we've had to make decisions. There's a list of jobs that need doing on these cars, and with quite a few of them, we've had to go nope, we can't do that, because it's more important to get the car back to its owner so that they can actually enjoy it, because they're a car guy or a car girl. So we've had to, we're a recommissioning show, but it's a decision. It's where, I don't want to say it's where Fuzz and I fall out. There have been times when I'm like, no, Fuzz, we don't have time for that. We don't have time for this. We have to, I don't want to say cut corners, because that sounds wrong. But if you've got somebody who absolutely lives and, you know, adores this vehicle, and for whatever sad reason, you know, time is of the essence, then we just have to make decisions just to get it back to them sometimes.
So we can't sort of make modifications that we would maybe have liked to have done, you know, because those sort
actually,
of things...
Actually, let's come on to that, because of the new series that you've just done. And before I get into that, Tim, is it possible you could lean back a little bit?
Yeah.
I'm getting a beautiful close up of your gorgeous nose, but little else. So.
From whatever angle you film it, it's all you'll see.
You're just a beautiful hunk of a man. What can I say?
You're not gonna get to see much.
I'll sit up. You need to cuddle up for warmth anyway.
And you see this lovely Sanyon Rexton that we're in is so wide bodied. We're quite a long way away from each other.
Well, you say that, but I've currently got my hand on your spanner.
You do have my... He does have his hand on my spanner.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, but I've got...
You are missing. Okay.
I've got my hand on your very long extension.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a very long extension.
Listen, guys, with the latest series, the Mondeo, because you talked about not modifying it and stuff like that. And I saw a little clip somewhere where you were having a little bit of a discussion about what you would or wouldn't do to the engine. And is that the kind of stuff that you're touching on?
Well,
leave that to me.
Yeah, that thing was modified two pieces, basically. Yeah,
throttle bodies. I mean, the thing is, we had, and you'll have to wait to see the episode, but the engine was touched by a company that you might have heard of called Cosworth.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Ooh. And we got access.
Nobody gets into Cosworth.
No, nobody generally gets into Cosworth unless you're somebody who's really tall and really annoying. That is the truth.
That's
how I managed to get access. I get access to these places because ultimately I say, so can we just have this official? So here's the story of whose car we're doing up. This is the story. This is the emotion behind it. And just for clarity, you've said no.
Yeah.
And people don't like saying no in that situation. Yeah. And I've worked that out.
That's right.
Emotional blackmail is part of your toolkit, basically.
It's precisely what it is. I mean, some of it is, isn't it?
Well, I don't get involved in that side of things. I mean, Tim's good at it.
If I have a thought, and I think it would be like with Carl. So when we did the Cosworth, the Mondeo, I knew, and I mentioned when I met the family at the beginning, I said, Cosworth, what does that word mean to Carl? And they were, oh my God, if you could have something, if this car could be anything to do with Cosworth, I was like, once the thought exists in my head, I have to move heaven and earth to try and make it happen. And I do that. And I'm the one who also procures the engagement with the celebrities as well in exactly the same way. Because if it's something that I think about, then I need, you know, and if there's a route to get to somebody who can help me with that, then it's what I do in my hotel room at night. It's I sit there and I will literally hunt people down until I find the MD of Cosworth, and I connect with them on LinkedIn or this or with that, and I send them a guest email. I wait to see if it comes back as a bounce back. Oh, it didn't. Now I know they've read it. So then I'll send them another one 2 days later saying, thank you for replying. Thank you for receiving and reading my email. So they think that they've sent a read receipt. So they're like, oh no, maybe he knows I've read it. I better reply. And I'm in. Then I'm in.
Yeah.
So oh, that's a good tip. That's a really good tip, actually. So tell me about some of the other cars that you've done, because you've done an SD1 Rover, which is so damn cool. And you've also done a proper 911 as well. A proper 911.
Well, with you mentioned the SD1, we did that with the help of
Jay Leno.
What a legend.
Jay Leno on Car SOS.
He's a fan of the show. So we'll give you a little clue on that one. So the guy whose car we did is a fan of car shows. So we came up with the idea of
TV shows.
Yeah. So came up with the idea of doing a reveal whereby he was sitting down, just, you know, watching Jay Leno's garage, as he might do with his
friends.
So he's watching a regular episode of Jay Leno's garage. just chilling. Nothing's happening today. It's an uneventful day. And then all of a sudden, Jay Leno walks up to that very camera and right through his television screen is going, is that Darren in Stafford? Darren, go to the door, mate. There are two blokes you might recognize. He's a fan of SOS as well. So then he goes to the door and then there's us and his car. Brilliant.
That's fantastic. When was that recorded? Was that recent with Jay Leno?
Oh, yeah. Just before Christmas.
Oh, he's my mate now. He texts me now. He had an accident. He's had two accidents.
I know. That's why I was asking, because I was asking. I know he's been through a few difficulties, but he's doing all right.
Jay Leno's your mate?
Yeah, man. I've got both numbers.
You haven't got any friends.
He texts me to say, I'm fine.
He doesn't know anything.
On both things.
He doesn't know anything about you.
You say that, but he's invited us both over to see his private collection of £50 million with $50 million worth of cars.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm Jay Leno's mate. Yeah.
Apparently, anybody that turns up at the gate is usually let in and allowed to see the collection. But
so long as they pay $20, that's what it is.
Tell me about the 9/11.
I would love it if that were the case.
We got turned down. the truth is, he was a lovely guy. He did a lovely thing. I spoke to him on the phone for at least an hour, and he was a fan of the show, and he did it willingly. And the delivery, he is so clearly a pro. When you watch the delivery of his show, you get drawn into it thinking, I'm just watching a bit of Jay Leno's Garage here. Then he breaks out of the... regular patter into this wonderful bit of immersive television for Darren. It's great.
That man is an absolute legend, and you know, long may he continue to do what he's doing. But from one legend to another, let's move back to the 9/11. I mean, that also is an icon, isn't it? And that's something that, I mean, what's the story behind the owner with that one? Because it's part of the Windrush.
It's quite a sad story. So Ben is the owner of that car.
Janetta
is his wife or partner. And Ben bought the car, I think, sometime in the mid-1980s. Had it for a long time.
Yeah.
And over the years, he was a taxi driver, and he built up got parts for it bit by bit. Bought a few parts here and bought a few parts there. He bought an engine for it, so he got it freighted over from the United States.
Oh, right.
And so basically, he was gradually building up all this kit of parts so that hopefully when he retired or had some free time, he was going to be able to rebuild it. But unfortunately, time caught up with him, and he was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's.
The thing was, the emotional, particularly emotional part of this was that when Janetta first contacted us, she knew and he didn't. He hadn't officially been diagnosed with Alzheimer's yet. So it was a particularly sensitive time.
Yeah.
But by the time the restoration was complete, he had been diagnosed. And it was one of those ones where it was probably the biggest restoration we took on for this series, or one of the two anyway. And that was one of the time sensitive ones because of the speed of the onset of Alzheimer's. We had to get it done. And it was a complicated car because, as Fuzz said, there were so many parts missing. It was a pre-73, pre-crash bumper. It's the one everybody wants, a classic 911 Target S as well. So the S is the big money, north of six-figure car. And it was a lovely, lovely thing. And we just wanted to get him in it as soon as we could.
The big problem, though, was that this car had been used for motorsport from the late 1970s through to the mid-1980s.
Rallying.
It had been on its nose. It had been on its roof. It had been on its sides. Man, that thing was knocked to pieces. There was hardly datum points on it. We had to get it on a jig. We had to pull it. We had to twist it.
Yeah.
We had to cut it. We had to do so much to it. And then when we unboxed the engine, we found out that newly rebuilt engine that should have been ready to go in straight out of the crate. It was full of sand. So many components were loose. It had just literally been thrown together, made to look like a Porsche engine, and then it had been sent away. Because let's face it, if you sell something to somebody thousands and thousands of miles away with an ocean in between, it's very hard to send that item back. And customer services, customer services break down very quickly at that point. And Ben had the engine for some time as well. So, there was nothing that we could do but get back onto that engine. We had to really prevail upon a lot of specialists, a lot of Porsche specialists, to help us
get through
this car done. It was no small thing. I mean, you know, they're sort of brilliant and beautiful machines, but wow, to do one of those quickly, you've got to really push the envelope.
You're going to do it properly.
No, exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah. It was the same shape because it's pre-73. It's the same shape as the RS. So I'm sure you can imagine the cost of the parts there. Yeah. So the parts were a nightmare. If it had been post-73, then it would have been a lot cheaper, or if it had been a 964 or whatever it happened to be. Yeah. But no, it was a Targa S pre-73.
Yeah, that's so what it was. It was a huge deal. So without a lot of extra help, we wouldn't have got that one done.
Yeah, amazing. So, Tim, I read somewhere, tell me if this is true, that you don't actually like watching the episodes back.
I don't watch any of them back.
He hasn't got a TV. He's too mean to buy a license.
You know what? The reality of it is, and I think it's because I have a front row seat to I have the best camera shots in the world, and they happen to be slightly above this massive nose of mine. They're called my eyes, and I see things and get an experience of Car SOS that is etched into my mind forever, and it cannot be improved upon. So for me, it simply comes down to the fact that, if I'm honest with you, I'm so busy and Car SOS takes up so much of our time that I see it, that I've been there, I know what happens here, I was there, and I love the experience, and I want to carry on doing other things to try and hopefully bring another, you know, an improved episode of Car SOS, continually evolving it.
I'd agree with Tim Shazad, because that's true, because what Tim gets to see is Car SOS presented entirely by me. He never gets to see himself.
Yeah.
So he looks through his eye. He looks through his eyes.
Yeah. And he gets the better deal. He gets the better deal. Then.
So there you go.
I watch it with massive sympathy.
You've said it yourself. You said it.
Yes, true. Touche.
Brilliant.
I know, Faz, you're still involved in the car magazines and you do a lot of journalism and stuff as well. But when you look at what's happening with the car community now and the classic car community and sort of the pressures that are being put, for example, on classic cars, you know, I've been doing a lot of content about ULEZ in London and what have you.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have said to me that, well, you know, our cars are part of our mental health. You know, our cars provide us with happiness.
Totally agree.
And things like these are basically, you know, they're causing problems with people because they say, well, if you take away my car, if you stop me from using it, it's going to affect my mental health.
Massively. Right. Okay. Massively. Right. Shazad, I've got the perfect answer for this. Because there are loads and loads of very old cars dating from the dawn of motoring through to the 1950s and 60s that have become sort of not unloved over the past few years, but their original fans and everything have unfortunately passed away or are very elderly and unable to drive them. So there are very few people picking up those cars, those pre-war cars and those early post-war cars. So why don't us car enthusiasts, so classic car enthusiasts, adopt a car from an era that we don't remember? So we're actually taking on. It's like adopting a grandparent and take on one of these older cars. Because, of course, the joy of that is that as things stand, they are ULEZ exempt. You can drive them wherever you like, drive them straight into the centre.
I agree, and I would love to see a London populated by cars older than 40 years. That would be absolutely amazing. It would be sensational. But the thing is that you deal with stories, and stories where people are connected to their cars. I mean, you just restored a Mondeo.
Do you know what?
That's true,
I'm going to say something here on this matter. I do believe that, for me personally, I strongly believe that working on cars, and I was brought up, you know, one of the other reasons I don't watch Car SOS is because I don't watch telly. I was brought up in a house where my parents didn't have a television on purpose and that we weren't allowed to watch it. It was get outside and build something, make something, do something with your hands. And I genuinely believe that since Car SOS, since the fact that I'm always fixing, building, doing something, it's what's kept my, you know, for one of a, I know it's the buzzword at the moment, mental health, but it's kept me on the straight and narrow. You know, I enjoy being myself. I enjoy being myself and I enjoy creating things. A drive for me at the moment, and I know Fuzz finds this quite interesting, is I had a 911 997 Gen 2 Turbo 6 months ago with 30 something thousand miles on it. I've just sold it and I've bought exactly the same car again for 100 with 125,000 miles on it.
So that you can drive it.
So that I will drive it. And my point is, my this year's campaign for me is for people out there that call themselves car guys, car girls, whatever, prove it. Use your car. I know too many people who sit on their cars and don't use them. So I have purposely sold my low mileage Porsche that I couldn't bring myself to drive because I was going, I can't. It'll devalue it by 500 quid on this trip. I'll put too many miles in it. Da-da-da-da-da. Sold it. Gone. And I've gone and bought a high mileage one that I look at it now and I feel sorry for it. I'm like, you've done 100. Nobody wants you anymore. And I now drive it and it gives me this pleasure. And that's why we got into cars in the first place, to drive them, to enjoy them. Too many people sit on them and don't. And they call themselves car guys and car girls. And I put myself in that category until I did this. So if you are into your cars, prove it. Go out in it. That's my take.
Do you know what? I've got a great strap line for your new campaign. Buy a banger.
Buy a banger. Yeah, buy it and use it. Use your car, because I know I could name 50 guys that have got 8 cars sitting in their garage. Like, this is that. That's got 12,000 miles. You might as well be collecting stamps. You know, show them to people. You don't deal with them.
I agree. I similar story to you. I used to own a three series, an E30 back in the 90s, and I missed it. And I've just bought another one a year ago. I bought another one, and I use that. It's not something that's special. I use that pretty much about 3 or 4 times a week. I'm out in that car. So
exactly. Buy it and you know, buy one that's been maintained all the way through.
Yeah.
Maintain it in that same way. Yes. Things are going to wear out, but that's just the way things go. They can be rebuilt.
Yeah. So my take is,
and also in terms of the environment, this is where actually it's better for the environment, because the longer use you get out of a vehicle, the better it actually is for the environment, right?
Yeah, exactly. Too many cars hit the scrapyards with too few miles on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So my push is, if you've got a low mileage classic car that you're not using, sell it. Get yourself on the same car with a high mileage if you love it, and get it out there on the roads and use it.
Or just use the low mileage one.
Or use the low mileage one. But for, you know, if you call yourself a car guy or a car girl, prove it. Because I reckon 80% of people that claim to be into cars now don't drive them. They're just collectors. What's that?
Yeah,
I'm a car collector. You sound like an idiot.
I mean, yeah, personally, I'm surprised that any of your cars have got the odometer connected up to them. But that's not official.
I've got a cupboard with all those in.
Do you still have the Lotus Esprit?
I've got the Lotus Esprit. I've got this new high mileage 911 turbo. What else have I got? I've got loads of stuff.
You've still got the Skyline
GTR. That's being fixed at the moment to use. Yeah, I've still got an L319, the new Mercedes. Well, the original Sprinter from 1964 has become Car SOS official. You'll see it in the first episode. The official Car SOS fan. Which is the coolest thing.
It is a very cool van, actually. It's very cool. Awesome.
Already prepping for Series 12? Is that in the pipeline? Well,
we hope so.
We hope so. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, that's not down to us. That really depends on whether National Geographic and Disney want to commission another one, and how many people watch this series. We never know that. So we never... Well, there's only been one occasion where we've actually known that we're going to make another series. But we don't know.
Long may you continue. And of course, this summer you're going to be out and about again, because I saw you at the British Motor Show and at Bicester and stuff.
Yeah.
See you.
See you there.
We'll be out.
Awesome. Cheers, awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Okay, right, cool.
See you
in a bit.
Hopefully see you next year.
Great talking to you, Suzanne. Yeah. All right.
Take care.
Bye.
See you guys later. Brown Car Guy. Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can. And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these 3 little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free. But this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.